The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I will be your guest host on today's show. My name is Sam Livingston. Thank you for listening to today's program. As usual, around this time of the year, we are pre-recording most of our shows, so I'm recording this one just one day in advance, and then tomorrow after this show, you'll hear from your regular host, Mr. Stephen Fleury. On today's show, I'd like to talk quite a bit about the vaccine mandates and how unconstitutional they are. We'll talk a little bit later on in the program about the FBI and some of the latest developments over there, and stretching all the way back to the Russiagate hoax. That's been 5 years now since that originated, and there's finally some developments taking place in that investigation with John Durham. If you'd like to watch this show, you can watch us live weekdays at that's the email address. You can watch us at thetrumpet.com/live. You can listen at CRN Digital Radio. That's channel 3 on their website. And this show airs at 11 a.m. Central Time. And if you have any comments or feedback, you can email us td@thetrumpet.com. Well, the vaccine has been available for nearly a year now, and you would have thought that as soon as Joe Biden took the White House in January of 2021, when COVID cases were the highest they had been in the United States up to that point, that he would have immediately gone to the Department of Labor and said, create a vaccine mandate. But they didn't. Why did they wait 9 months and then decide this was such a critical emergency that they could not waste any more time, that they had to get the Department of Labor to create a vaccine mandate, essentially using OSHA to pressure companies into vaccinating their employees or face fines? Now, the reason this wasn't done immediately is because it's unconstitutional. It was supposed to be a last resort, and they have been pushing people, and now they have dropped the hammer. Now, some people speculated pretty early on that Biden would use this. There are lots of avenues you could go through, and this looked like one that they would be willing to take. So you have an administration using agencies to do things that these agencies were not created to do. The most obvious one that comes to mind, and since Biden took the White House, is the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention telling landlords that they're not allowed to evict people who don't pay rent. So what does the CDC have to do with rent? Well, nobody knows, and that's why the Supreme Court struck it down. But it went on for months, and the Biden administration knew it was unconstitutional, and they said, well, we're just going to do it, and it'll buy us some time until it gets knocked down in the courts. That is an imperial presidency. They are not bound by the Constitution. And that is what Biden swore an oath to uphold. Not to save lives. He swore an oath to uphold the Constitution. We should not be looking to the federal government for 90% of what we now rely on them for. So we have the CDC pretty much erasing property rights in the United States. Now we have the Bureau of Labor implementing a vaccine mandate. And this is Joe Obama, this is the Antiochus administration using whatever agency he can to undermine and destroy the Constitution. Now we have the Department of Labor, you've heard about them. Within the Department of Labor, you have the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, that's OSHA, O-S-H-A, they were created in 1970. Now, the Department of Labor, they were created by Congress has to sign off on the creation of this executive agency. And they were created in 1884. Then in 1970, they created OSHA. So these departments, they have to act within what Congress said they were created to do. They can't just say, well, we're now an executive branch and we can just have our tentacles extend into whatever area of American life we want because Congress created us. Now, it's a part of the executive branch, but the ability to create those agencies has to come from Congress. And that's what creates the boundaries and the limitations for what these agencies can do. A blogger at Substack, we quote from him quite often. He's a prominent lawyer, but he remains anonymous. He has written an article titled, "Why the Biden COVID-19 Vaccine Mandate is Unconstitutional." He says, the second question to ask is whether Congress has clearly authorized the Department of Labor / OSHA to mandate vaccines. The answer is no. If Congress clearly authorized labor to mandate vaccines, then we would have seen such authority in the act going back to 1970. Look for yourself. The language isn't there. Instead, there are general grants of authority to set mandatory occupational safety and health standards. Looking to the history of OSHA, this authority has been understood to regulate employer actions to provide a safe workplace or employee actions at work. The OSHA Act has never been understood historically to include mandatory vaccinations. So this OSHA has been around for over 50 years and they've never done something like this. Now, that doesn't mean a company can't have its own mandate, and you can get into all the legality of that and not granting religious exemptions. But as far as OSHA is concerned, this has never been part of their jurisdiction. It's not something that they can come in and say, you have to do this. And now suddenly there's this emergency, and, you know, 9 months into the Biden administration, it's the Department of Labor that is forcing people to get the vaccine. This blogger writes, this is significant because the Supreme Court recently looked to agency history to determine the CDC lacked the authority to issue its latest eviction mandate. So this is along the same lines. They're using an agency, and it's frankly at this point a rogue agency, and they're using it to implement their agenda when historically that agency has never been used to do that before. And the Supreme Court, rightly so, knocked down that CDC eviction moratorium. And they're probably going to knock down this vaccine mandate. Later on in this article, I won't get into it, but he talks about how hesitant the courts are to get involved in these touchy issues. They don't want to be politicized because someone might die, and then they're going to shift blame to the Supreme Court. And that's how you know we are heading into very tumultuous times. The court should not be afraid of politics. They should be afraid of the Constitution. What does it or what does it not say about these regulations? Are they or aren't they constitutional? And this blogger writes about how, well, they're probably not going to strike this down. It's probably going to get taken up by a lot of state courts, maybe district courts, because they don't want to be blamed for doing this. Well, we'll see how it goes. We'll see how these cases work their way up through the courts. But this is the track record of the Obama administration. And like we've said on this show, this is not Joe Biden's presidency. This is Obama's third term. If you watched Joe Biden at the United Nations, or if you watched his interview with Boris Johnson, or if you've watched any of his speeches over the last 8 months, you know that that man is not in control of the White House. He's barely in control of what he even can and can't say. But they just implement their agenda and they use whatever agency they can. And then they say, well, this is going to buy us a few months and then it'll get knocked down by the courts. We know it's not constitutional, but we're just going to rule by decree. And hey, maybe we'll catch a break and the court won't shut it down. They know it's illegal, but they do it anyway. And they are taking advantage of a crisis that they have created. continuing on from this blog at Substack, he writes, "For example of clear authority relating to public health, look to the authority Congress gave to Health and Human Services to take action in case of significant outbreaks of infectious diseases. Going further, to allow the mandate would be to allow OSHA to require vaccination as a condition of employment. The OSHA Act contains no such language or authority, so they're completely out of bounds. They're in territory that they have never tread before, that they have no business treading into." He goes on, "We also observe that we by no means concede congressional authority to mandate vaccines." So this doesn't mean Congress can decide, oh, we're going to write a new rule that allows OSHA to mandate vaccines, because OSHA was created for this specific purpose. You can't come along later and just decide, oh, well, we also want it to be used for this purpose. He writes, "In other words, Congress could not give OSHA or the Department of Labor this authority because Congress has no such authority to give it. You may have seen some pundits argue that the 1905 case of Jacobson versus Massachusetts gives this authority. These arguments are misplaced, as that was the Supreme Court over 100 years ago considering state and not federal authority." And that's a case that you're probably going to hear a lot about in the news. The Jacobson versus Massachusetts in 1905, Boston had an outbreak of smallpox and they mandated that everyone needs to get the vaccine. And if you don't get the vaccine, you're fined $5. Now, everyone points back to this old law and says, see, it's okay for the state to mandate vaccines. Well, first of all, we're talking about local health authorities. They're talking about a disease that I believe has a 30% mortality rate. And even in that case in 1905, we're not talking about depriving people of their constitutionally guaranteed rights. We're talking about a $5 fine, which back then I think was about $100. They weren't denied access to restaurants. They weren't denied the ability to travel. They didn't have their rights suspended because they didn't comply with the mandate. And I think it's funny when they go back to these old cases like this, it's 120 years ago, and they say, that's the law, those are the rules. But then you look at some of the other rulings by that same court, and I don't think the Democrats or Joe Biden would be very happy about upholding those cases or those rulings. So you'll probably hear quite a bit about that case. That's what everyone says. They point to that and say, oh, well, the vaccine mandates are constitutional. And really, that case doesn't have anything to do with the federal government getting involved in your life to this degree. I saw this clip the other day. I thought this was really interesting. This is from the founder of Black Lives Matter in New York City. His name is Hawk Newsom. I believe we've played a few clips from him before. And normally we would not agree with anything he says, but in New York City, people are being discriminated against because they don't have the little vaccine ticket that de Blasio has referred to as the Freedom Pass. Such an audacious thing to say. But here, this founder of BLM New York City is talking about how he believes people should be allowed to choose, and the media are suddenly silent about Black Lives Matter. Here's clip three.
About these vaccine mandates. Listen, the vaccine is a choice, okay? It's a choice. You shouldn't exclude people from everyday activities because they choose not to engage in something they have every reason to doubt. The government's story on the vaccines have changed every 1 to 2 months since Donald Trump. The vaccines have had effects that people come out and say, oh, well, you know, that never happens. But they do happen. People die. Joe Biden said that folks wouldn't be hospitalized. People are being hospitalized and dying. We, as black people, have every reason not to trust the vaccine. But yet again, I'm not telling you not to get it. I'm just saying you should have a choice.
You should have a choice. And there are plenty of reasons to doubt that vaccine. And where are all the big corporations with the BLM logos plastered all over their buildings or flying those flags? They endorse what Hawk Newsom says right there. You should have a choice. It's very rare that we would probably agree with something from BLM. But we've talked about this on previous programs. It's the minority groups in New York City that primarily are not vaccinated. And now they can't enter into restaurants. I saw a fight break out because this hostess would not allow these people to enter because they didn't have the vaccine passport. So suddenly, you know, you don't hear all the corporations getting behind this BLM leader. People are starting to think for themselves. This is a crisis. I saw in Nevada, they just passed a resolution to label COVID misinformation as a public health crisis. So if you don't toe the party line, if you say something wrong about COVID, they're calling that a public health crisis. And that's going to be pretty significant in that state, because what that means is they're going to get emergency powers to squash people who dissent with the government lines. I mean, this is what a communist takeover looks like. If you think for yourself, if you question what we say, if you doubt us, well, you're killing people by doing that. And we're going to shut you down. We're going to kick you off of Twitter. We're going to kick you off of Facebook. How long before they start arresting people for these sorts of things? We're seeing the Constitution trampled in the United States. It's just like terms 1 and 2 of the Obama administration. In Mr. Gerald Fleury's book, Great Again, he writes, "There's a reason the Constitution focuses on what the government can't do to you. It aims to restrain despotism and to preserve freedom. That is its great strength, not its fundamental flaw," as Barack Obama says. America's Constitution has given more freedom to more people than any other government charter in history. It is a noble document that has inspired and enabled so many to attain accomplishments that any other system anywhere else in the world would have denied them. You would think Americans would love the Constitution, but that is not the case in this country anymore. The radical left wants to destroy the Constitution. The radically left Democrats are very hostile to the Constitution, and so are the mainstream media. Some in the media said Mr. Obama's only real problem was that he didn't issue enough executive actions to enact radical policy. And now we're seeing it in term 3 on a grand scale. Mr. Fleury writes, "Many liberals now preach that for America to solve its many problems, it needs to abandon the Constitution. Most of the educational institutions would like to get rid of it. Many even argue that it is not even the supreme law of the land. This, too, is a liberal strategy to usurp power that America's founders never intended politicians to have. An administration that ignores the Constitution when it doesn't serve its own agenda has a lot of power." I believe that book was published in 2015 or 2016. "An administration that ignores the Constitution when it doesn't serve its own agenda has a lot of power," and that is what is happening. They are bypassing the Constitution. They're undermining it at any step of the way, any place they can. They are trampling on it. The truth is being cast to the ground. What did Mr. Fleury say there? "There is a reason the Constitution focuses on what the government can't do to you. It aims to restrain despotism and to preserve freedom." If we really upheld the Constitution, there would be no lockdowns, there would be no eviction moratoriums, there would be no forced vaccinations. The federal government should really be out of your life. But now we are seeing it become God to many people. I mean, right from the beginning of the pandemic, I was just baffled at how people were blaming the government. Well, how did you not stop COVID? How did you not stop these cases? And it's a respiratory disease. It's a microorganism. When in history can you get those to stop spreading? And suddenly we look to the government, which is just a bunch of human beings, and decide that, well, you're responsible for stopping the spread of respiratory diseases, and you're responsible for keeping the water levels from rising. As if this entity of men have supreme power over the world, and we just have to give them more power, and then all the crises will be solved. Florida's Governor Ron DeSantis calls it the biomedical security state. Is that the state you want to live in? That's what Joe Obama wants to bring about. I thought I saw this headline in Florida. They have a new Surgeon General down there. His name is Dr. Joseph Ladapo. And he said some very sane comments the other day. And the media are having a go at him, calling him a radical. I mean, the way they responded, you would think he was a heretic. Here is what the new Surgeon General of Florida said. We need to respect human rights, that people have autonomy over their lives, and it's not okay to, he's talking about lockdowns and vaccine mandates. It's not virtuous and it's not right to take away those rights from individuals. The state should be promoting good health, and vaccination isn't the only path. It's treated almost like a religion. We support measures for good health. That's vaccination, losing weight, exercising more, eating more fruits and veggies. We support it all. So when he said it's about being healthy overall, and that includes losing weight, exercising more, and eating fruits and vegetables, the medical establishment are lashing out at him. And he's a Harvard graduate. He went to medical school at Harvard. And you would think, you know, by the way the media reacted, he was just an insane radical for telling people to try to be healthy, even though the vast, vast majority of COVID deaths occur in people who have deadly comorbidities, like diabetes or are overweight. And like he says there, the vaccine mandate or the pro-vaccine movement, it's treated like a religion. There's no alternative. This is the only way to save your life, and you have to do this or you can't function in society. You have to lose your job. Victor Davis Hanson wrote an article titled Science, They Said. He writes, the scientific method used to govern much of popular American thinking in empirical fashion, scientists advised us to examine evidence and data and then by induction come to rational hypotheses. The enemies of science were politics, superstition, bias, and deduction. Yet, we are now returning to our version of medieval alchemy and astrology and rejecting a millennium of the scientific method. Take the superstitions that now surround COVID-19. He talks about natural immunity and how that's completely rejected. You can only be protected by the vaccine, even though natural immunity, I think I've read an article that says it's 26 times more or offers 26 times more protection than the vaccine. Getting the disease, letting your body develop the antibodies that it needs so that it can fight the disease in the future. Instead, the vaccine route is jab, 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 because they can't give you too much of it or it'll kill you. So they have to do it in smaller amounts. And who knows how long that will go on for, but they ignore natural immunity. Well, what about science? Then Davis Hanson, he talks about Fauci and his mythical percentages about herd immunity. At the start, it was, well, once we get to 65% herd immunity, then we'll see the disease stop spreading. So that's 65% of the country that's either had it or been vaccinated. Then a poll comes out and says, well, 70% of the country would be willing to get vaccinated. So then the next day, Fauci says, well, based on that poll, I decided to bump the numbers up. So actually, we're only going to get herd immunity when 75% of the country is vaccinated. So he's not being governed by the scientific method. He's being governed by polls. Davis Hanson talks about the investigation of the origins of COVID-19. Why didn't we just follow the scientific process? Why is there this big cover-up? One of my favorite, or one of my least favorite, was social distancing. Just this arbitrary number pulled out of a hat. In Singapore, it was 3 feet. If you were closer than 3 feet, you're going to spread the disease and kill everyone. In the United Kingdom, in the United States, it was 6 feet. In Germany, it was 6.5 feet. And if you just stepped a little bit over that line at the store, it was like you were a mass murderer. And it was so funny that, well, each country kind of got to their own number on this. And just 2 days ago, the former Food and Drug Administration Commissioner Scott Gottlieb, you see him on MSNBC a lot, he said on Sunday that nobody knows the origins of the 6-foot social distancing recommendation. This is Scott Gottlieb, clip one.
And you're right, the 6 feet was arbitrary.
The 6 feet was arbitrary in and of itself, but if the administration had focused in on that, they might have been able to affect a policy that would have actually achieved their outcome. But that policy-making process didn't exist. And the 6 feet is a perfect example of sort of the lack of rigor around how CDC made recommendations. Nobody knows where it came from. Most people assume that the 6 feet of distance, the recommendation for keeping 6 feet apart, comes out of some old studies related to flu, where droplets don't travel more than 6 feet. We now know COVID spreads through aerosols. The initial recommendation that the CDC brought to the White House, and I talk about this, was 10 feet. And a political appointee in the White House said, we can't recommend 10 feet. Nobody can measure 10 feet. It's inoperable. Society will shut down. So the compromise was around 6 feet.
I don't even understand that clip. These people have no clue what they're doing. He says at the end there, well, they really recommended 10 feet, but that was just too impractical. As if 6 feet, I mean, in what way is that even measurably easier between 10 feet? How many people died because they compromised on those 4 feet? Or how many people were saved because we did 6 feet of social distancing? Nobody knows. You can't measure it. As he says there, that was just arbitrary. He says there was a lack of rigor about CDC's guidelines. And you still, to this day, see the stickers on the floor at supermarkets. Stay 6 feet apart. 6 feet. Save lives. Save lives. Stay 6 feet apart. Completely arbitrary number. Not based on the science. But if you didn't, if you stepped over that line, well, you hate the science. And he says in that clip, nobody knows where it came from. It's just like lockdowns. Well, they're doing it, so we have to do it. Science. He says 10 feet was inoperable, so the compromise was around 6 feet. Isn't that how you want your doctors to make decisions? Well, it's going to be harder to do that one, so we'll just do this one, as if that was any easier. And you saw the effects. You saw it in the supermarkets, you saw it on the airlines. We were herded around like cattle. And then these people pulled that number out of thin air, out of a hat. These are the experts. And then 6 months later, we came up with a vaccine and it's going to save more lives, take it or die. Who would trust these individuals after what we've been through over the last 18 months? And there are a lot of doctors. There are a lot of doctors who actually deal with patients talking about how ludicrous this is, talking about the side effects of the vaccine. Project Veritas had a video. It's already been taken down, already censored, of this nurse who is witnessing people come in and having heart failure. One of her coworkers was coerced into getting the vaccine, worked as a nurse all through the pandemic, totally fine, gets the vaccine, a few days later checks into the emergency room, a few days later is dead. And she is in this interview crying about it. And she filmed doctors complaining about how the side effects are not being reported. So the doctors who actually deal with patients don't seem to be in favor of this. But the ones who are, well, they're the Faucis. And they sit in their desks and they are in lockdown. They never leave their office. You don't see them handling patients. You don't see them at hospitals. They just sit at their desk, and they're the intellectuals that tell you how to run your life. Not elected, by the way. Davis Hanson, he talks about how, people are just all the overt lies. Fauci the other day said there are more children dying from COVID than from influenza, an outright lie. He said, so even though relatively speaking, compared to an adult, they don't get as seriously ill, we have lost more children from COVID-19 than we ever lose for influenza. And we vaccinate children against influenza, a blatant lie. More kids die from influenza than from COVID. And you know what's ironic about that statement is that they're not being vaccinated for COVID-19. That's how non-lethal it is for kids. And they're being vaccinated against influenza, and there are still more influenza deaths among kids. Science. Victor Davis Hanson writes, how can the government hector citizens that that they have a moral duty and soon a legal obligation to be vaccinated when it does not ask vaccinations of unvetted refugees flying in from Afghanistan? How can the government medical community remain largely silent when an anticipated 2 million foreign nationals will cross illegally into the United States in the current fiscal year, almost none of whom are vaccinated or tested for active cases of COVID-19? Jen Psaki said it the other day. Peter Ducey asked her, and she said, well, the illegals, they're not coming here planning to stay very long. Well, what are they coming here for? Just a little vacation that they have to risk their kids' lives and swim across a river and walk 1,000 miles? She says, well, they're not planning to stay long, so we're not going to mandate the vaccine. But if you want to fly from Europe or if you want to fly from Canada, you have to be jabbed. It's just for a holiday. Even if you're coming for 5 days, you have to be vaccinated. Davis Hanson writes, science is dying. Superstition disguised as morality is returning, and we all will soon become poorer, angrier, and more divided. Superstition disguised as morality is returning. Mr. Gerald Fleury has written about that for many, many years. Will worship. You just keep telling a big lie and you keep repeating it over and over again until people believe it. And we've seen that happen with social distancing. We've seen it happen with masking. Fights breaking out over dumb little face diapers. People being kicked off of airplanes because the mask comes below their nose. Two-year-olds being kicked off of airplanes because they're having an asthma attack and they can't keep their mask on. This is insanity. Davis Hanson says, and we will all soon become poorer, angrier, and more divided. Carol Markowitz of the New York Post says, masking two-year-olds is proof positive we've gone way too far. She quotes Fauci. Again, Fauci's biggest enemy is his past self. He cannot contradict the Fauci of early 2020. He never does. He just said, well, the science changed, but he never explains what changed. Remember, he said with the masks early on, he wrote that email to one of his colleagues. Well, the masks aren't really effective because the COVID particles are too small and the mask threading isn't dense enough to actually stop them. Then a year later, he says, but the science changed. Okay, Tony, what changed? Did the COVID particles suddenly get bigger? Did the threads get denser in the mask? We're all still wearing the same mask. He doesn't say, he just says it changed. That's will worship. Markowitz says, absolutely no data have been released to alter what Fauci said, not even with the Delta variant, yet we continue to take this anti-science approach to masking kids. And they're not doing it in Europe. They don't make the kids at school wear masks. The airways or the airlines, they have higher thresholds for masking kids. I saw a video of a two-year-old at a daycare center in New York City. The two-year-olds at daycare centers now have to wear masks, just screaming and crying as this babysitter tried to force this mask over his mouth. And then he ripped it off and they held him again and then put it back on him. It's just infuriating. It's insanity. They are enslaving people. They're training people and conditioning them to think like slaves. There was the video of the mom and her two-year-old who was suffering an asthma attack and got kicked off the plane. And then you look over at the Emmys and it's a packed house. Thousands of people in that dining hall. No masks, no social distancing. LA County, though, they said that was totally fine. This was actually a TV production. And on TV productions, it's okay to not wear a mask, even though all of the waiters and waitresses had to wear them. All of the servants had to wear the masks. Mayor of San Francisco caught partying without a mask. She said, I was feeling the spirit and I wasn't thinking about a mask. Three-year-olds in San Francisco are forced to wear masks. Joe Biden doubles the fines for people who don't wear masks on planes, for the two-year-olds. Victor Davis Hanson, he talks about, well, what about the vaccine being safe for pregnant women? Rochelle Walensky, the director of the CDC, in August said, Pregnant people need to get the vaccine. The science is clear. It's totally safe for pregnant women. The Washington Post, CDC guidance, now official. Pregnant people should get coronavirus vaccine. So it's official in August 2021. Here's April 23rd, 2021. CDC recommends pregnant women get coronavirus vaccine. What was that based on? Well, Walensky said there were no safety concerns for more than 35,000 women in their third trimester for their babies. So where did that data come from? That data was taken from the CDC's Safe app and the Safe Pregnancy Registry, as well as the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. It showed they experienced side effects similar to those observed in the rest of the population. So an app. You're pregnant, took the vaccine, no problems. 35,000 women in their third trimester. Now, don't mention the fact that the first trimester and the third trimester are completely different things. Don't talk about people trying to get pregnant and aren't able to who have been vaccinated. They're relying on the VAERS website. The New England Journal of Medicine, they were the ones that really organized that study and got it together and said it was safe for women. They recently issued a correction to their article. They said, at the time of publication of preliminary findings in the original article related to this editorial, the number of spontaneous abortions was 104 and there was one stillbirth. However, no proportion could be determined for the risk of spontaneous abortion among participants vaccinated before 20 weeks of gestation, because follow-up information was not yet available for the majority of those persons. They did not have the data. They did not do the study, but they told you it was safe. They told you the benefits outweighed the risks. And they do not measure the side effects. And that did not stop the FDA from giving the vaccine full approval, even though they admitted they did not know the effects on pregnant women. Pfizer, their FDA-approved vaccine is called Comirnaty. And this is approved by the FDA, and everyone says it's safe for pregnant women. It's safe for pregnancy. This is from the FDA's website. Available data on Comirnaty administered to pregnant women are insufficient to inform vaccine-associated risks in pregnancy. Insufficient. There's not enough data. And the only thing they tested it on were pregnant rats. That it's on their website. Let me find the quote here. Comirnaty has not been evaluated for the potential to cause carcinogenic cancer, impairment of male fertility. In a developmental toxicity study in rats with Comirnaty or the vaccine, there were no vaccine-related effects on female fertility. So the female rats didn't have any problems with their babies. And still, again, even in that experiment, they're not studying the ability to get pregnant. They're doing it, you know, late in the pregnancy, and they're saying, well, it's safe. They can't even just wait. They can't just wait. All right. Hey, we don't have all the data yet. We're going to wait a year or two. They have to force it on people. I want to shift gears a little bit here. And obviously, all of these things tie in together. We're just seeing the experts. We're seeing the deep state. We see the elites. We see all of these institutions going haywire. Well, and it's traitorous what a lot of them are doing. They are attacking the United States of America. One of Hillary Clinton's lawyers was indicted last week. John Durham finally shows up. And if this is something that has been going on now for 5 years, it's so hard to believe that we're following it in 2016. And it's been 5 years and only one person has been held accountable. And they got 12 months probation for altering evidence and presenting it before a judge. And he's practicing law again, not even disbarred, as a lawyer. Michael Sussman was indicted by John Durham last week. And Sussman is a lawyer. He works for Perkins Coie. And they're the ones that paid Glenn Simpson and Christopher Steele to make up the dossier. And Michael Sussman, he approached the FBI and told them, hey, there's some big stuff here. Trump's working for Russia. I got this thing about them working for Alpha Bank, and there's links all over the place. And the FBI just lapped it up. And they asked Sussman, are you working for anyone? Are you being paid for anyone? Sussman said, nope. And the FBI was off. 3 years, 4 years of persecuting Michael Flynn, Donald Trump, Roger Stone, the lot of them. And now John Durham's coming around and says, well, Michael Sussman lied. We're going to indict him because he is a lawyer working for Perkins Coie. He knew where that information came from. He knew it was wrong, and he was being paid by Hillary Clinton's campaign. And then he turns around and he says, this was a clear and obvious lie. The FBI would have known it on its face. Michael Sussman is not some no-name lawyer. He works for Perkins Coie. They do all sorts of work for Democrat candidates. The FBI is trying to save face now and say, well, we thought he just came to us on his own accord, and he was just a concerned citizen who really wanted to just help save America. They wanted to believe it, and they knew it was a lie. That's the sort of shenanigans that was going on in the United States of America, and it should not have taken 5 years for that to be uncovered. It was obvious day one that that was a crazy conspiracy theory. And Jake Sullivan knew it. He published a statement right in July. He knew about it. Michael Sussman knew about it. They all knew it was a lie. Complete hoax. We saw about what the FBI was doing on September 18th. Just trying to get people to show up to this protest. It's the FBI rally. All of these guys who dressed exactly the same way, and you can see the outline of their guns in their pockets, and they're trying to pretend that they're just regular protesters. One of them got arrested, and they acted like the Capitol Hill police, well, we didn't know he was an FBI informant when we arrested him. And meanwhile, you have the FBI failing to protect these Olympic gymnasts. This hearing was all over the news last week. These gymnasts who were molested by this man for 14 months, they had been warning about him, and the FBI just ignored it, or they even altered evidence to protect him. Holman Jenkins at the Wall Street Journal says, in ignoring the latest John Durham indictment, most of the media and official Washington are ignoring the elephant between its lines, the Bureau of Investigation. He says, in delivering to the FBI fanciful evidence of Trump-Russia collusion a few weeks before the 2016 election, Mr. Sussman is alleged to have lied to the FBI's chief lawyer, James Baker, claiming he was acting on his own behalf and not as a paid agent of the Clinton campaign. Already, you might be rolling your eyes. Mr. Durham provides ample reason in his own indictment for why the FBI would have known exactly whom Mr. Sussman was working for. So now the FBI is trying to go after him and just say, well, we didn't know. He lied to us, as if their job is not to vet information. We just trusted him. He seemed so honest. He seemed like he really cared, and we didn't bother to look into it. The FBI is a joke, and they have a lot of power. They just took it at face value. Meanwhile, they just overlook all of these other crimes. They're imprisoning grandma for trespassing, walking through a shrub garden on Capitol grounds, trespassing on federal property. You need to be arrested, lose your job, and pay all these legal fees. It is insane what is happening in the United States right now. Holman writes, its culture, this is the FBI at the top, seems incapable of using the powers entrusted to it with discretion and good judgment, or at least without reliable expectation of embarrassment. They're not worried about what the public says. They're not worried because they're career politicians. They don't have to worry about politics. They just rig an election if they have to. They don't answer to anyone. The agency should be scrapped, Holman writes, and something new built to replace it. One possibility is a national investigative corps that would be more directly answerable to the 93 U.S. attorneys who are charged with enforcing federal law in the 50 states. That's a good idea. The FBI shouldn't exist. I don't see anything like that coming in the future. This organization has the support of the White House. Obama and Biden love using them to persecute their political enemies. And on the subject of persecuting political enemies, Tucker Carlson had a great segment about the vaccine mandate in the military and how the military is forcing each of these divisions of the Army to get the vaccine. And they're really pressuring right now the Navy SEALs. This is clip four from Tucker Carlson.
We do know the vaccine mandate is taking a terrible toll on the U.S. military and on this country's ability to defend itself at a very volatile time in the world. Already, three members of the CIA paramilitary teams that first entered Afghanistan after 9/11, remember them? They got there before the military. Three members of that team have been suspended for not getting vaccinated. They're being told to await disciplinary proceedings. Meanwhile, an Army officer, Lieutenant Colonel Paul Douglas Haig, just announced that he's resigning from the military rather than take medicine that he does not want or need. In a statement, Hogue said he was, quote, incapable of subjecting myself to the unlawful, unethical, immoral, and tyrannical order to sit still and allow a serum to be injected into my flesh against my will and better judgment, end quote. There are many like him in the U.S. military. The Navy just informed the most famous unit in the entire services, the Navy SEALs, that members will be forced to leave if they don't take the shot. It does not matter if they have natural immunity, and many do. It doesn't matter if they have a valid religious or medical exemption. If they don't submit to the order, they cannot deploy, and they'll have to leave the SEALs. The deadline for this is almost immediately. Now, to be clear, just in case you're wondering if this is in response to some kind of crisis, we don't believe a single Navy SEAL has died of COVID, and that makes sense. These are some of the healthiest people, not just in America, but in the world. They're the Olympic athletes of the military. Many of them have had the virus, they live in close quarters, and they've recovered. That means they have more natural immunity than the vaccine could ever provide. And yet, as of tonight, we're hearing that hundreds of Navy SEALs face being fired imminently for refusing to take the shot. Now, keep in mind, there are only about 2,500-ish active duty Navy SEALs. Each one of them costs at least $500,000 for the US government to train. So imagine the effect on our country's military readiness of this.
They don't want to submit to what they know is something that's unlawful. They know it's an experimental drug. They know it hasn't been tested, but it's the principle of it. This is a purge of the US military. And Tucker goes on and he talks to a lawyer who represents a lot of these members of the military. A lot of them just want a religious exemption. And they're not getting it. They're being put or they're not being allowed to deploy. And this is at a time when the Army has been embarrassed after Afghanistan, when we faced threats all over the world. And there are just 2,500 Navy SEALs. And we're talking about hundreds of them saying, I'm not going to submit to this. Willing to leave because of it. They're using the scamdemic. They're using COVID to purge the military. It's just like Nancy Pelosi back in January of this year. She wanted to have the National Guard. She wanted the barbed wire fencing around her office. 4 months she had these soldiers there. And then she got a little nervous and said, well, I think we really need to be vetting them on who they voted for, because we want to make sure we've got loyalists in the Army to protect us. What they're doing is they are creating their own fighting force. And there are a lot of people who are speaking up against it. They want a military that fights for the Democrat Party. And this is Banana Republic stuff. This is a traitorous coup. And it's just fascinating to see this happen. Rarely did you hear about so much politics in the military. I mean, they were there to just serve and to protect. And they did what the administration said to do. You rarely ever heard from generals. Now Milley's out there on the celebrity tour. He's just like Fauci. I mean, they're celebrities first. They're woke first. And then they're doctors and generals second. And they're out there politicizing these institutions that, you know, the foundation of why people trusted them is because they're supposed to be above the political fray. And now they are deeply political. Like Victor Davis Hanson said, people are going to get angrier. There's going to be more division. These are not science-based decisions. They are political. But in that context, it's interesting to see the military getting divided up. Mr. Brad McDonald wrote an article earlier this month titled "How Afghanistan Could Help Donald Trump Return to the Presidency." And he quotes quite a bit from Mr. Gerald Flurry reading into these prophecies in 2 Kings 14, verse 28, about how Donald Trump wars to recover what was stolen. He writes that, this is Mr. Flurry, 2 Kings 14, verse 28, strongly indicates that Mr. Trump recovers his presidency by some kind of warring, not voting. It seems certain to me that this will happen before the next presidential election in 2024, unless there would be some kind of war and voting combined. Mr. McDonald writes, how many veterans have the same view as this one general who was kicked out? He says, talking about the Biden administration, he said recently, they just kind of lay down. They're laying down for everything, whereas the previous president, he actually had a backbone. I mean, these are leaders in the military. These are highly respected veterans saying, we don't want to fight for Joe Biden. He does not like the United States. There are 90 retired generals who were demanding that Lloyd Austin and Mark Milley be kicked out, forced to resign. Mr. McDonald writes, a spirit of resistance and revolt is swelling across America and in America's military. In his article, Mr. Flurry explored the meaning of the word ward in 2 Kings 14:28. He wrote, consider how different this word is from saved in verse 27. Mr. Trump did not literally have to war to save Israel or America during his first term, though he did have to fight to expose all the fraudulent investigations, treasonous acts, and bogus impeachments. There are different ways you can war, but the indication is that regaining office may take considerable work. Donald Trump will have to fight for it. It doesn't have to be military action, but it certainly could. Now, how many people, even within the federal government right now, are happy about what's happening, are happy about the direction of this country? How many of them are just going to say, I'm not doing that to Joe Biden? I mean, you see a civil war brewing. And a lot of people are trying to come up with their own solutions. I was at the grocery store, and this one woman started talking to me, and she was not ashamed at all about what she was saying. She said her and her boss and her family are planning to move to Montana. They're going to build a compound, and they're going to buy a lot of guns for when the country breaks down. She was saying it pretty loudly, not embarrassed at all about her plans. A lot of people see that the United States is not going to last much longer. And obviously they see that, but their hope is in themselves. Their hope is in their guns. Their hope is in the fact that they're isolated in the mountains somewhere. You know, there's no going back to the way things were in the United States. Some people, they're prepping physically. They can see what's happening, but how come more people aren't prepping spiritually? How come they're not worried about getting right with God? Because we have weapons like we've never had before. There were nuclear bombs at the end of World War II, and like Mr. Armstrong has written, the third one is going to start with those bombs, and you can't hide from those. You can't hide from the tribulation. You can't hide from the day of the Lord. How come more people aren't getting God's view on the news and on world events and acting on these stories? Well, because it's the Feast of Tabernacles, I'd recommend that you read and go through or request the Mr. Armstrong's booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow. And that sums up man's inability to solve problems. And have we seen that on display these past 2 years? Man is incapable of solving problems. And when he tries to solve them, he actually contributes to making them worse. And why can't man solve the problems of this world? That book explains why and explains what the solution is. The solution is turning to God, getting God's help, reasoning with God and submitting to his law and to his government. That's what the Feast of Tabernacles pictures. Thank you for joining us on today's show, Mr. Stephen Fleury. We'll be back with you on tomorrow's show. Email your thoughts and comments to td@thetrumpet.com. Thanks for listening.